The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear.
Hey, thanks a lot, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We're back. We're talking homebrew. We're hanging out. We're doing all sorts of fun stuff here on the Brewing Network. And I will tell you that it is, February, is it March? I don't even know what these shows are for.
It's March 3rd or something.
Yeah, right, but it's 2021, and that means that the world is sort of colliding forward and pushing ahead. And, so if you're still listening to this, thank you for being safe and spreading diseases and sicknesses. I really appreciate that very much because it enables us to get out much, much faster. So thank you for doing that.
Last March, it was an interesting month, if I recall. It seems like more than a year ago.
Interesting as far as like just when you do stuff, you're sort of like gauging what's happening, or what are you talking about?
I'm just being a dumbass.
Oh, okay.
I remember last March. It was significant. Something really.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You are being
fucked
a dumbass.
Up having that month. What was it? Sorry.
Yeah. The Ides of March, man, you know, which is funny because like the Ides of March are what, March 15th, and we got locked down on the 14th. So, you know, right. Newsom has no sense of like drama or arts, right? He should have done it on the 15th.
I had all kinds of plans that weekend. I was going to go see Tame Impala. I had tickets to see Tame Impala at the Chase Center. But I was am I going to go? It started getting crazy. Then they canceled it like the day before.
I remember we had Alice's second birthday party. Alice's birthday is March 11th. So we had her birthday party, like, I think on the 11th. And it was like, even then, it was like, should people be coming over? I don't know. This is fucking weird. And then, like, the next day, I drove to Vacaville to, I've told the story before, to return my my track suit that I bought at the Adidas the Adidas outlet mall because it was too small, so I wanted to get a larger one.
You were totally into track suits right then.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I still am. And my next one will be velour. Don't worry about it. Anyway, and I remember like going through there, and then I was like, this is just weird. I feel very uncomfortable. And then I felt comfortable enough to go to the Levi's store to get a jean jacket. But I was like, I don't want to be here. I'm like sort of holding my breath and paying very, very much attention to like other people in the store. And it was very odd. It was a very odd time.
Yeah.
Thank you very much to our sponsor, Five Star. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com and learn about the best way to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment, which is, of course, with Five Star Chemicals.
And JP is relearning this fine skill as he's begun brewing again.
I really am, man. And it sort of feels good to use Five Star stuff like PBW specifically for brewing again. Because I've talked about it all the time. Like I clean my sink with it. I clean my fucking pans with it. I clean a bunch of shit with it. I clean my oven glass with it.
Yeah.
But I haven't used it in a brewing application proper for over a year. And it feels kind of cool, man.
You clean your oven glass? Does it work on your oven glass?
Yeah. I made a paste.
Cool.
It's not like crystal clear anymore.
Right.
But most of the mung is off where you can turn the oven light on and actually see what you're baking. Yeah.
That's cool. That's really good to know. That's some good shit.
Yeah, thanks, man. Anyway, so Five Star Chemicals, thank you very much, you guys. And we are here today with Ben. Ben, welcome to the show, young man.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us. And you've sent in a black IPA, I think. I keep reaching over to things.
It's a sort of
specialty.
Double black rye IPA. Excuse me, the label was skewed. I was like, oh, black rye. Okay, cool. Double black rye IPA. Okay.
Or yeah, what's the word order for that? Would it be a rye double black IPA or a rye black double IPA?
If I worked at Starbucks, it would be a double rye IPA black, I think, maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Who can say?
Yeah.
None more black.
Yeah. Is this something that you've done before?
Well, it's a it started as like a Wookiee Jack clone, the Firestone Wookiee Jack.
Okay, yeah.
And then it was December when I decided to brew it, and like COVID was doing, you know, the
spike.
I just said, you know, screw it. I'm gonna like add 5 pounds of base malt to it and call it a day.
Okay.
So it was, it's, you know,
it was gonna be just normal, but you decided to goose it a little bit because
yeah, I goosed it. That's a
okay.
Good way to put it.
Okay. All right. I love it, man. I love it. That's cool. So it was supposed to be a Wookiee Jack clone, but just a little bit more oomph in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, man, that's good enough reason. You know what I mean? I like it. Well, I'm gonna open this because I do have this one, and I'm excited about it. Thank you very much for sending that out to everybody. Brian Cooper, are you ready this time? Would you like to start off?
Forward the beer.
I love it.
I have it here.
All right, go for it, man.
Yes.
So I had a nice hiss when I opened it up. The cap and everything was, the fill level was good. In the nose, it is firmly hoppy up front. Some citrusy and especially some resiny notes. A little bit of some grassy overtones in there too. Some definite alcohol showing up here as well alongside all the hops. Kind of a alcohol sweetness in there. Low dark malt elements, stopping far short of being rich. Just kind of dark bread-like with hint of a little light chocolate. You know, some light roast coffee, soft, smooth, dark malt aromas there. It seems very clean. Moderate fruity esters from the ale fermentation as apparent here. No off aromas. Not getting any diacetyl or DMS. So good job keeping it clean. It's impressively dark brown. It's very... It's a black IPA. It's fairly clear at the edges, but it's nearly opaque. Getting a few highlights. There's not much in the way of highlights, what I'm saying. There are a few highlights showing through when you shine it, the light through it. So it looks the part. A creamy, well-formed, light tan head. I'm actually getting some lacing on the sides of the glass, and It's got a pretty presentation to it. I have to give it full points for appearance. Nice fine bubbles. Flavor. It's got a pleasantly hoppy IPA character up front there. There is also a malty depthiness I wrote on the score sheet. Possibly from the rye, somewhat spicy, I would say. But then again, the hops are just a lot of citrus and resin dominating here. And a dry hop character coming across, just a little grassy, but not in an unpleasant way to me. The hops are definitely not overdone, but there's a lot going on here. So it's, you know, there's a lot for them to have to stand up to. It finishes appropriately semi-dry. Through the firm, smooth alcohol here. That does hint at sweetness, but you can tell it's well attenuated. The alcohol is fighting for attention in there. Definitely, it's like, hello, I'm here. The bitterness is medium, high, and smooth. It's not biting or coarse. It's just, the beer is nicely balanced to the hops, but the malts, the dark malt is giving them a little run for their money. They're, you know, it's not, it doesn't just taste like an IPA. It tastes like a black IPA. But it's not like a big, really coffee where you would say, oh, that's too much on the dark. So nice, just hitting that limit, getting it really dark without, going overpowering on some of the dark malt flavors and aromas there. So nice job there. Again, clean, no DMS, diacetyl, anything like that. So yeah, the mouthfeel, it's medium bodied. I might like it to be a little lighter bodied. I think just the alcohol again is playing it up big. There's some moderate alcohol warming, but it's smooth. It's not biting. It's not harsh. It's not drying my throat out. Medium high carbonation is pretty spritzy, which I think is good for this beer. There's no obvious astringency from the hops or the malt. You know, there's a lot of polyphenols in hops and in darker malts, but it's, you know, you did a good job not getting any astringency out of that if you mashed and sparged, or I doubt it's an extract beer, but we'll find out. Not really creamy, but definitely not harsh at all. Just it's you know, the maybe a little, you know, you can feel the hops in there a little bit, kind of a, I don't know what, how do you define the mouthfeel of a hop? It's a, like a,
can
not
you
leathery, but kind of
not earthy, not leathery,
almost pretty resin, like a resiny feeling.
I always call it astringent to me. That, yeah. To me, it has a little astringentness on it.
I'll call it like the mouthfeel of a good bong hit, maybe. I don't know.
Danky?
Yeah.
That would be the epitome of dank, I believe.
That's flavor, though. So.
Are you saying Ben looks like a stoner? Because I find that I agree with that.
Anyway, so yeah, the mouthfeel's in there. It's pretty close to what you want for what it's declared to be. A very pleasant drinking double overall, double black rye IPA. It seems that the black IPAs are having a nice little resurgence these days, and I welcome it. I, for one, say, hurrah! I actually last night after drinking this beer, I put in two orders, and I'll talk about the first one that inspired. It's like, yeah, I haven't had a Wookiee Jack in a long ass time. And they, you know, they stopped making it for a while, and they started. I had heard they made it again. You have to order it on the brewery's website. You can order it right now to California. I couldn't find it in stores anywhere. Wow. I was like, where can I get some of that? Because this beer, I did write on the score sheet. It's very reminiscent of the Wookiee Jack beer. It has that nice resininess and the strength and the complexity.
It really is. And like I had that beer a couple of times, not just in samples, not like full glasses, because it's not a style that I make or I brew, I drink. I'm just not into the thing. But that beer is so unique because it does give you this beer memory, this taste memory. And this, it tastes like the way that I remember that. It's those danky resin hops with that I wouldn't even say slightly roasty, but like, you know, almost moderate roasty, chocolate, like bitter chocolatey thing. It's a very unique combination. It tastes exactly the way that I remember that beer tasting.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm finding that I would like even more intensity of and variety maybe in the hops. But I mean, although it's great as a kind of an amped up Wookiee Jack clone, which is exactly what you just told us it was, and I'm happy about but yeah, you know, now maybe just dialing back the alcohol, that those hops shine through a little bit more. I don't know how happy you are with how your experiment came out, but I'm happy with it. I think it worked nicely. And it is declared as a double IPA, so you know, it's I think you said earlier it's a 9%er, and the Wookiee Jack is like 8.3, so it's not that much higher. And so you're in the territory. It's really,
it's probably closer to 11.
Oh shoot!
Wow! Holy cow.
Damn! Here we go, boys. Let's go!
Where did I hear 9%? Yeah, after you said you threw in that much extra malt, I'm like, how did you get only up to 9? I misheard that. Then okay, we'll get there.
Yeah,
but yeah, the alcohol is definitely. It's popping out in a big way here, but it still keeps that essence of the Wookiee Jack. but I think it's pulling away from your hops a little bit. And I don't know, you can play around with different hops in it, but the hops that you used are great. I don't know that you necessarily need to change those, but this is a fun experiment. I finished this bottle last night as well, after drinking a Baltic Porter. So in the middle of the night, I enjoyed it. I gave it a 39. I think that's a fair place to put it. There's not a lot you can fault this beer for. Just mostly kind of balance things.
Mm-hmm.
Because the alcohol maybe is just a little bit out of balance, but it's so smooth. You don't care really. Yeah. So I like this beer quite a lot, and I'm happy. I'd love to hear the recipe. I found myself looking up Wookiee Jack clones after tasting this last night, and there's the BA has one that looks interesting. I might like to try sometime, but I'd like to know where you got your recipe. And I think theirs called for a really low, another thing to do would be to use a really low mash temperature. Like they called out like a 145 to something, mash temperature, just to dry it out, because with all that alcohol there, to still keep it nice and dry, without adding maybe too much sugars and losing the body that you want to kind of keep, just figuring out a way to get it to attenuate even a little bit more. But it's dry enough. It's that's not the problem. There's no real problem. It's tasty. I'm going to drink some more of it, and I'm going to listen to what Brian has to say about it.
Thank you. All right, Brian, let's go.
Well, Ben, I got to start with my usual question. Are you in a homebrew club?
I'm not. No.
You're a lone wolf. He's you're on a watch list. You're a member of the leaderless homebrew resistance. Okay, that's cool. And what area of the country are you from?
Huntington Beach, Southern California.
Yeah. Oh, no. I lived in Huntington Beach for many, many years. I worked at McDonnell Douglas right there in Huntington at Bolsa and Bolsa, Bolsa and, yes, that was Bolsa and Bolsa Chica a billion years
yes.
ago.
Yes. Yep.
Back in a past life. That they tore that building down now.
Some of it's gone. My office is about a quarter mile from there. So, yeah.
Nice. So I'll enough of that, but I love Huntington. It's a cool place. I actually had read somewhere that MMA fighter Tito Ortiz is now on your city council, Christ. And that he's insane.
Yes.
As our show's devolving into politics and
not politics at all. It's more just like local Huntington Beach craziness.
Yeah.
Huntington Beach always was a little bit of a crazy place, and probably always will be. And it's kind of a cool little offbeat beach town, which I always love and always will. But anyway, thanks for sharing this beer. As an initial matter, Brian was talking about Wookiee Jack, and I'm not just blowing smoke here. I never liked Wookiee Jack a lot because I always thought it kind of smelled like feet. And I wondered if they were maybe an early adopter of Mosaic, because much like Summit hops can smell like onion and garlic, and Simcoe can smell like cat piss if you harvest them at the wrong time. I firmly believe that Mosaic, if you harvest it wrong, smells like feet. But this reminded me of Wookiee Jack in a good way, and frankly, I preferred it to what I recall Wookiee Jack having been. And I say this as a person who loves Firestone Walker beer, who drinks a lot of, currently in the past and currently in the future, drinks a lot of Firestone Walker beer.
Currently in shitting. The past.
Well,
every time I forget, you demonstrate that you are in fact a lawyer. If that's not the most lawyer bullshit I've ever heard in my life. Currently in the past.
Currently, a lawyer drinking. In the past, 11%. In the past, present, and in the future. I was, am, and will be drinking this beer.
All right. God bless.
I do not recall drinking that beer.
I would not drink it with some eggs. I would not drink it off my legs. No, I don't know. It's
all right. Well, let's get to the actual beer.
At this time, whether I drink that beer or not.
But in any event, bottle is good fill, low hiss on opening. I did like the name Double Black Rye IPA. Brian kind of hinted this before, like, what, I'll be a lawyer again. What was double modifying? Is it a double IPA that's also a black rye IPA? Is it double black, like none more black? This album could not be more black. It is none more black. You know, what? Regardless of what the name was, I really enjoyed it. The aroma, you know, I definitely got some spicy rye at a medium level. Got a piney resinous hops at a high level. Blended very smoothly, low level of dark malt, not a roasty dark malt, but just that kind of pleasant, almost a bread crusty, chocolatey, you know, not a roast character. It all blended together very harmoniously, 9 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. My note is color is black, duh. Because it's pretty black. Probably if I held it up to a stronger light a bit, this is really dark brown. Because I've no beer that's supposed to be black is ever technically black when you put it in front of enough light. It's always kind of a shade of brown, but still. Persistent low head, clear as far as you can tell with a beer this dark, kind of tilting around the edges. 3 out of 3. Flavor. Flavor is initially sort of a rye spice and dark malt with some piney floral hop flavor. And I actually had the experience that I rarely have with a beer where you take that sip and then right afterwards, yeah, it's still not as much, but that first sip I had out of a glass from this bottle, the hop flavor just exploded. I mean, it went from being, you know, at a medium level to being extremely high in mid palate. And I really liked that a lot. You know, this is an IPA. It's a beer that's supposed to have a lot of hop flavor.
Dude, and I don't know. Yeah, I think you hit like a resin nugget, dude. Something like that.
Must have been. Yeah. So maybe I should have been having my lighter next to this thing or something. That's kind of that's my signal to, like, you know, pour this into the beer bong and light it up or something. I don't know, but it was really really well done, a really high level of hop flavor in mid palate. And the balance in mid palate was to hop flavor to me. Medium bitterness comes up toward the finish and balances the malt as well. And all those elements balance real well into a long finish. It's very well attenuated. The rye spiciness is present all the way through, but it's not obtrusive. You know, like most home brewers, I've done rye beers, and rye can be a pain in the ass. But you also have that idea that, oh, I'm making a rye beer. I want to put a lot of rye in here. And you overdo the rye. And this the level of rye, I'll be curious about your recipe, like what percentage you put in. I think really is just perfect to balance everything. So 16 out of 20 for flavor, mouthfeel 5 out of 5, high carbonation, medium warming, it's perky rather than creamy, not astringent. Does really well. Overall impression, 9 out of 10 for a total of 42. My notes here kind of begin with, you know, I really like it, but, you know, how do you judge it? Because, you know, 21B, you've got separate subcategories. There's 21B rye IPA. There's 21B black IPA. Then there's 22A double IPA. And, like, what do you do? But this beer, I have to say, kind of answered that question for me itself, because it was so harmonious and it was such a good blend of the rye and of the black IPA and of the hops. And we've talked about this on this show recently about how tough it is to do hop selection for a black IPA. And there's so many ways that hops don't play well with dark malts. And I'm not sure that everyone, even at a pro level, fully understands the interaction of hops and dark malts and why some are successful and some aren't. But this, the goal of any of these, when you're looking at like a specialty anything, is, does everything play well together? Do you have harmony? Do you come up with something that's tasty and flavorful? And I think the answer is yes. I mean, you definitely did. So that's why this is a 9 out of 10 overall impression. 42 out of 50 And I did kind of, excuse me, I'm with that 11%, I'm, you know, going to hiccup here or something in a second. You know, I did kind of wrestle with, well, maybe I should have even gone a little bit higher on this, but this is really well done. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about how you made it.
Yeah, 42 out of 50. Ah, man, that's really low. I'm going to tell you that right now. What did you give it, Cooper?
At 39.
That's really low, too. You guys are, you guys are,
should we go higher?
You guys are fucking bent over, dude. I mean, could you make this beer without the rye? Just to what you were saying, Char, where to put it? Is it? I mean, do you need to claim or specify that there's rye in it? Could you, if you were tasting this, would you go, God, there's rye in here? He didn't fucking specify, so I'm gonna ding him for it. I don't think so.
No, I wouldn't ding it. And if this were entered as a black IPA, and I didn't know there were rye in here, I would get the spiciness.
Yeah.
And maybe I'd identify rye. Maybe I'd put that down to the hops, but I wouldn't ding it for being having rye when it wasn't declared.
Okay.
If I were to put this in a bucket of a black IPA or a rye IPA, I'd put it in the black IPA bucket. Having said that, yes, there's enough rye in here. You could put this in the rye IPA bucket, and I think also do really well. But I also would worry if I were entering this in a competition, if I declare, because rye IPA could be a pale colored IPA. It could be like a standard regular old IPA that happened to have some rye malt in there. And I would worry that it would be perceived. Does that make sense? Like, it would be, the rye is part of the black IPA. You kind of fit into the category. The darkness is part of a rye IPA, might make you stand out and not necessarily in a good way. Does that make sense?
Well, it's also odd just, I think so. It's also odd just calling out a specific malt, you know, necessarily, and saying, you know, I mean, you can make your malt bill more complex by adding some rye.
Yeah.
Do you have to declare it? No. You can make your malt bill more complex by adding some Munich or something else. There's no such thing as a Munich IPA. You know, it's just a malt that you can choose to use or not use.
Well, I think the spiciness could almost come off as maybe a quality from the hop combination and the dark malt combination. So it's like a roastiness with a hoppiness. So I don't think I don't know. It's anyway, I don't know why that's like fascinating to talk about right now. But anyway, Ben, do me a favor, man. Can you give us your recipe for this, if you wouldn't mind, please? And we can sort of talk
about it. Let me take you through it. So the recipe was 18 pounds of two row. It's a 5 gallon batch.
Okay.
18 pounds of two row.
Damn, that's a lot.
Well, yeah.
Now I'm getting the 11% out of that with just that about a two row.
3 pounds of rye malt, 8 ounces of caramel rye, and then 8 ounces of Carafa 3 and 8 ounces of midnight wheat, which actually my homebrew shop had chocolate wheat, which I don't know if that matters. And then an ounce of Warrior, which I just threw in like first wort to keep it from boiling over when I finally got to the boil.
Right.
And then an ounce of Amarillo and an ounce of Citra at 15 minutes. And then 2 ounces of Amarillo, 2 ounces of Citra in the whirlpool for about 30 minutes. And then 2 ounces Citra, 2 ounces Amarillo, dry hop, and then a second hit of the same thing 2 days later.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then it was 2 packs of 001. And, I'm sorry, I forgot a pound of sugar too.
Mm. Oh, because why not?
What was your original gravity?
1105.
God damn, dude. If you took that down,
I didn't even bother. I don't know.
You didn't even bother. Damn.
Yeah,
dude.
Bruce Smith calculated it out to 1018.
Okay.
Wow. Well, you know, it comes across as really well attenuated.
Very dry.
Excellent job on your fermentation.
Yeah.
Do you have a fermentation fridge or temp control somehow?
It was occupied by a lager, so this just sat on the bench in my garage.
Well, I mean, good time of year. You're right on the beach, yeah. And
it's cold. Yeah, it was cold. It was low 60s, yeah. But it does go up and down about 10 degrees when I park my car every day. So
yeah, right near the beach.
Are you in like Huntington Beach downtown, right by the beach, or are you a little further away from the beach?
About a mile in. Yeah,
that's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. I don't know, man. You could take all that shit down 30% and make a really good black IPA.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I get what you were doing. You were just kind of fucking around, it seems like. But this is, I mean, look, I think it's a really good beer. What did you give it, Brian? 42? I would give it a 43 just to fuck Brian over. But also, I like it. I think it's the combination that you have and the job that you did works really, really well together, which is in. Everything about this beer is counter to what I enjoy drinking, and I think you did a really good job.
I was going to say, JP, that you hate big beers.
And I hate big beers. I hate IPAs. I hate black IPAs. I hate double IPAs. Like, there's a lot of shit to hate about this, but I don't hate the beer. I think it's very good. I wish I could drink it all. I mean, I might even. Who knows?
In a weird way, it's harder to balance it when you bring the alcohol down. Like, I've done it at 8%, and it either the roast or you know, the dark malt or the hops stick out too much.
Yeah, I think you
actually blended
probably the sweetness from the alcohol maybe kind of lends this thing that you can't really get otherwise.
And I think it just kind of blows out your palate a little bit.
Well, that's probably true too. Yeah,
it's playing with the resiny quality there. Yeah,
yeah.
There is a lot of alcohol here.
Yeah, Ben, do you have any questions for the guys?
The alcohol is not immediately obvious. And that's a signature of good fermentation, right? You use like a lot of 001 out of the gate.
Yeah.
That's anytime someone makes a big beer, I don't care if you temp control with in a fridge or putting it in your garage when it's wintertime, if you can keep the fusels down and have a good fermentation, that's the sign of like that's step one for a really good big beer. You have to have that, and you did that really well.
Yeah. For sure. Ben, do you have any questions for the guys?
No, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, you guys, if you were trying to make this beer, what would you do with the recipe?
Just throw it in the garbage.
Competition. It's not really a competition beer. I mean, I think we kind of hit on it. The whole descriptor for it is ridiculous. You know,
I think you
black rye. You know, blah blah blah.
Why is it
probably a triple black?
Well, hang on.
But I was just going to say.
Well, setting aside the judging and competition aspect, if you were going to make this and you just wanted to tweak it, where would you guys tweak it?
I always want more hops.
I turn it into a lager. I turn it into
an
fucking
IPL or whatever.
Yeah, a German Pilsner is what I would turn it into.
In the morning, want some more hops in your shampoo.
Yeah.
It's already like a pound of hops in a 5-gallon beer. I don't know where do you go from there?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, guys, because I don't think anybody's really asked us, us loosely, but you guys specifically, like, what would you adjust competition aside? So if you were making this for you, what would you guys do?
I would like to ask about how you treated the hops when you did your big dry hop additions. Did you? Because I found I need this much dry hops and I put it in, but then it just sits there. And I read, I think it was Vinny or someone, just like, if you're on a homebrew scale, you can go in and you can be agitating those hops. So like I've got a hazy IPA in my fermentation locker right now. I go every morning, every night, and just kind of swirl it around and just get those hops moving. At a big brewery, a lot of times they'll bubble CO2 up through the bottom of their big fermenters to rouse the hops in the bottom and keep them moving and just keep those oils absorbing and the contact moving. Yeah. I don't know. What did you do?
So I've found with this beer that if I like – I've made it other times, and if I just leave it at ferment temperature and I dry hop it, all the hops are just floating on top of it 4 or 5 days later. Like it hasn't mixed at all. So when I cold crash it, all the hops are densely packed at the bottom. So, you know, I for this one, it was 2 hits of dry hop, 2 days apart. And then I cold crashed it, and that, pulled all the hops through the beer to the bottom. I'd like to play with recirculating. I think that would help pull the hop flavor out faster. Maybe get rid of some of the grassy flavor, but I'm not really set up to do that. I don't know. I got to figure out.
You're dreaming big, man. It sounds like you're dreaming really big right there, yeah. Which is good. That's what, I mean, yeah. That's what home brings all about, man. I think more people just sort of fantasize about what they could do if they could, right? Rather than actually execute.
Had an episode, someone described doing it with a keg and a pump, and
yeah.
I'd probably go back to that and listen to how they did it and then try and replicate that. But.
Yeah, I mean, really, you can get like an air stone and just throw CO2 through it and just kind of like put it in and true. Mix it up in a carboy or something, yeah. too. You don't need to pressurize it.
This kind of gets back to what we were talking to about in the previous episode about you get to like the low to mid 40s.
Yeah.
And what is, because you look at the bell curve and everything, virtually everything is between, you know, 22 and 40, or whatever you want to say. When you get to above 40, there's gets to be like just intangibles that are difficult to quantify, if not impossible to quantify, about what is, because there's no, you know, Ben, this is so well done. There's not any obvious flaws that I can point to. Oh, you have acetaldehyde or you have oxidation. No, I mean, there's nothing here to fix in my view, as far as something that's wrong. So if nothing's wrong and I like it, then what would I do different to make it better? And I don't know that I would do anything. And if what would get it to be up closer to 50, and I have to be honest and just say I don't know. And maybe there's just that something, maybe there's that magic. I think that kind of, you know, it's easier. On the other end, it's easier to say, oh, what gets you from a 22 to a 15? I guess you have to give the courtesy 13 or something.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, whatever. That's easy to do. The question on the other end, on this long tail on the high end, is how do you get from really excellent to perfect? And I have to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just
you already made some suggestions. You know, you suggested maybe calling it a triple black.
Yeah, that's
double,
true.
Mm-hmm. Triple black rye IPA, yeah. Or just triple black IPA. Leave off the rye. There's
but that's a name, right? That's not a recipe. Yeah. That's nothing to do.
All in, you know, looking at the scoring guide on the score sheet, we're all in excellent territory. Mm-hmm. Could I come up if I judge this beer in a competition with you guys as my co-judges? Would I come up to that 40 after we discussed it? Probably. But I felt like the alcohol was a little high for a double IPA. It was the only thing you could fault it for, just as it's declared.
Yeah.
And that's just a fine point. Hence, it's a really enjoyable beer.
And I see what you're saying about the triple, what I said about the triple now. Yeah. Okay, that point makes sense.
Well, right. And I guess, you know, I'll throw my hat in the ring. Also, I would bring the alcohol down a little bit. And again, I know why you brewed it, because you were just fucking around, because, you know, I understand all that. But if I were to adjust this to keep it within the spirit of the beer, I would bring the alcohol down a little bit, because sort of as it warms, I do sort of get that sort of like slick sweetness from the alcohol. Maybe I'm just
syrupy.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I would bring it down a little bit, but still keep it over 9.
Yeah,
just because.
Version of this. Like, you could do 10.
Yeah,
that's
strange. And honestly, what I would do.
You talked about doing an 8, and it didn't come out like you wanted.
Yeah.
So bump it down to 10. You know, take it down a percent or two. What, maybe you like get the sugar because you want to dry it out.
Yeah.
Maybe use half a pound of sugar. You know. Yeah.
What I would
modern
do.
Double IPA is around 9. That's a good place. Yeah. 9.5, 10.
What I would do honestly with this, because the recipe is you have the recipe down, is I would just fuck with it every once in a while. Just make a batch. And I understand there's a pound of hops in it, so this shit's not cheap. But look, you're in Huntington Beach. It's fine, okay? But
well, you don't homebrew to save money anymore.
Right, exactly, right. But, make these little tweaks. Maybe it doesn't need the corn sugar. Maybe it does. Who knows, right? And because I think this is a recipe that could really... Are you a competition guy? Do you enter competitions at all?
I haven't. I mean...
Do you want to? Do you care about that shit at all?
I'd probably enjoy it if I did it. Yeah.
Then this is the recipe, I think, to go with.
Yeah.
And I think you should work this recipe as your racehorse for a competition, because I think it's very, very good, and you have a very good handle on the flavor combinations, and I think you should just try to tweak it out for competition and go for it if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one other question. So now that you've kind of had, you drank it a little bit and you've been waiting.
Uh-oh. We have to give you 10 Bitcoin for the antidote?
No.
Okay.
So to me, one of the things about this beer that I would change is how it stays on your palate. Like, to me right now, I still have a little chocolatey, little paperiness from the hops. How do you get rid of that dry, papery astringency? It's not really astringency, but on the tongue right now, to me, it's lingered too long. I'd like it to be gone, kind of thing. Mm. Like, not the flavor, but the dry, there's like a dryness to it.
Yeah, I think there was that je ne sais quoi in the mouthfeel for me. Like, what? It's a leathery hop thing or something. Like, what?
Leathery is probably a good descriptor for it. Do you have any ideas on how to limit that? Or
what is that? Too much rye? Do you think? I mean, is it a rye issue?
No, I think it's oil.
It's the alcohol.
You think?
I think it's an oil from the hops coating your tongue, and just using this much hops in a beer, it's going to be hard to get away from that.
Yeah.
See, I read it as a rye thing, so all three of us are reading it a different thing.
Although,
so pick one thing and change it and see what happens.
Carbonation cures all those ills, right? Mm. Regardless of the cause, a little higher carbonation will drag that off the tongue a little more.
Pretty high already.
Yeah, it is pretty high already, isn't it?
Yeah, mine. I saved the bottle with the low fill. I think mine, the one I'm drinking right now, is a little less carbonated than yours. So maybe I'm getting more of it than you guys are.
No, I get that same thing though. Yeah, and I don't know of an easy fix for that other than using less hops, which I would not recommend necessarily. Yeah. This beer.
What were the I've tried reducing the hops in another variation, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, maybe experiment with different hops that are less resiny, but I like the resiny character.
I mean,
of this beer, so that's
gonna I do too.
As it's sitting there on my mouth, the bitterness is sort of prickly.
Yeah.
It's sort of hanging. So
dry hops again.
It's pretty much all Amarillo and Citra.
Amarillo Citra. Yeah.
Maybe it's too much bitterness.
Like it. It's a great choices for hops.
Yeah.
The Citra is one that I saw a lot of in the recipe, the clone recipe for Wookiee Jack, and I'm not sure if that's what they use there, but
This is pretty much straight off of probably what you were looking at.
Yeah,
it looked like
a fun recipe. I was like, oh yeah, I should brew that. Cool.
Well, all right, well, Ben, if there's nothing else, we'll let you go, man.
All right,
I have one quick question.
Of course, you do.
What is your local homebrew store in Huntington Beach these days?
Costa Mesa, Windsor Homebrew.
Windsor Homebrew, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, I've heard of those guys. Know those guys?
Well, it wasn't there a billion years ago when I lived there, so.
Nice.
Times change. I was curious.
Well, Ben, hey man, if you rebrew this or adjust it at all, let us know.
I'll send you a light lager next time.
Man, that would be great. I'd appreciate it.
I don't do this very often. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But
I would be pleased to drink your light lager, man.
Yeah,
man,
but it's
really good.
It pays off. It pays off. But yeah, I'm interested to see, man. Well, anyway, thanks a lot. Ben,
yeah,
I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate
and
it.
we're gonna take a quick break, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California. making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Ma'am, I'll need to take your top off for this examination.
Oh, doctor.
All right, thanks a lot, everybody, for hanging on. We're winding things down today, but we brought on our good friend Jeff to come and talk to us a little bit about BJCP exams and all that kind of fun stuff. Jeff, what's going on, dude? Welcome back.
Thank you. It's fantastic to be here. I think this is, I don't even know, 3, 4 sometimes.
Something like times. That, man. Yeah.
Jeff is an OG with the show here. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
Cooper was reminding us that you were on our first show.
Yeah, I was on number one. You guys beat the hell out of my beer as every time I come on.
So. It was a Belgian pale ale, if I recall.
And it ate
It was
shit.
A Belgian triple. You called it something else. I don't know.
Okay.
You called it like 22, I think is what you called it.
Oh, we miscategorized it. Okay.
Damn.
That was my bad. I take it all back.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. We miscategorized it. I'm looking at your little brewery back there, Jeff. You have like 100 taps.
Yeah.
And you have a flat screen, and it looks like... And I can't tell for sure because it's a little blown out because of the, you know, whatever camera. But it looks like you have like what's on tap on your flat screen TV. It's like a 33-inch flat screen TV.
Well, it's probably it's bigger than that.
It looks, you asshole.
It looks smaller on TV.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
But yeah. So I'm using
size does matter no matter what anyone says. Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely. You got to watch the game or show the beer list. So yeah. So as Char was saying, it's the tapless IO. Mm-hmm. So it's you got everything everything on there, which
that's
is awesome.
Cool, man. That's, I like it.
Just like a hop grenade or something. That's
sure.
Cool.
Yeah,
right, I figure through the COVID era, if you can't go out to a bar, you may as well just have 8 beers on tap. So
yeah,
fuck yeah,
yeah. Why not? All right, so Cooper, let's go through a little bit about why we drug Jeff. Here, I was going to say, Brian, but I was like, why did we drag Brian Sharrow here? No, why did we drag Jeff on the show? And what are we chatting about a little bit today?
We've been drugged by the 11% double black.
Yeah, IPA. Thanks, Ben.
We're sipping here, and Jeff probably has Wookiee Jack in his fridge there.
I do, but I'm drinking a mild JP, just so you know.
Thank you. I don't have any more. I'm drinking the mildest of beers.
You guys are like mild
Banquet.
Buddies.
Coors Banquet. Yeah, a mild with Kvike yeast. You should try it. It's real good.
Okay. Scottish ale, but anyway.
No, well, we can't all be perfect.
Recently, I know that I've been helped. I tried to help, and I failed miserably at helping him enough, maybe, but I helped Jeff in his goals to advance within the BGCP, and he's this far away from master. I consider Jeff a master in all but name. He knows more about beer probably than I do, and he's traveled more than I do. I like I said earlier, I wanted to go to Belgium this last year, but it didn't quite work out for my first time. But you've been many times, and you've tasted a lot of beers over there. you have a lot of real world beer tasting experience. And, you know, you've also spent some extensive time studying for the beer exam. So passing the tasting exam is one thing, getting your foot in the door, but you're working to take it to another level, and you're national and high national. So and working towards master, and you'll get there. You will get there. But what Jeff did is he put together all of his resources when he made the last push to improve his score, and you did improve your score. All these study materials that he created in doing that for himself, he wanted to share it with people in a way that may help other people to do well on the exam. So I recently went through his intro course on his site, and I'll let him announce all that stuff if you want to, you know, give a little plug. I don't think so. I asked him if he made any money on this before, because I would ask him for a fat sponsorship for the show.
That's right. He has a larger than 33 inch TV in the background. He can afford it.
That's true.
No, no, this is why we're losing money here.
Yeah, like any IT firm, you got to spend all your money on the office shit. And then you go bankrupt, so you keep it all. Yeah, I got you. All right.
Silicon Valley, all the way.
Yeah. Well,
I like what Jeff's doing, and I'd like to see him, he has plans to expand it to the studying for the tasting exam.
Well, let's talk about it. Jeff, what's your website?
So it's masterthebjcp.com.
Okay, and it's just basically a primer or a trainer to help people do well in the test. It sounds like I could have used that, because I did horribly on the test. I am recognized. Which sort of just is like...
So you wouldn't even be able to sit for this one.
Yeah, okay, good.
So this is the one I started with is the written exam. Yeah. And so in order to even sit for the written exam, you know, there's sort of the prerequisite. You've got to get 80% on either the current beer judging exam or the tasting portion of the legacy beer exam for those of us that have been around for a long damn time.
Oh, wow.
Once you sort of graduate into that level, and not everybody goes beyond certified or recognized, right? The majority of the folks in the BJCP are kind of really staying at that level and are saying, hey, that's what I want to do. I don't want to keep doing what I'm doing, which is banging my head against the wall, taking this test over and over again. So I took the test, the written exam at the last homebrew con, I guess, out in Providence. And I had spent a ton of time putting together resources. And I think what I had seen is, you know, going through, you know, Brian's course or Dave Teckham's course, in person. And I saw, you know, an opportunity, I guess, in this past COVID era, is just sort of say, hey, there's not really an e-learning course out there where somebody sitting at home can take this on. So that's kind of what I did. And I sort of just put together everything around the exam, the prerequisites, the, you know, helping people understand what it is, and then, you know, giving people the tips and tricks that I learned through doing it. So that's kind of what I went about putting together.
Okay.
Yeah, the exam, very cool. Like a time crunch. You need to regurgitate a lot of information, and regardless of how much you have in your brain, you kind of have to think about not just the knowledge that you have, but ways to organize it and put your thoughts out in a cohesive way and getting complete answers on the exam.
Well, and I think that, you know, aside from judging, like I took the BJCP exam mainly because I was shitting on judges for so long, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna see what I'm complaining about. And it turns out I was accurate on everything that I've ever complained about. No, I'm kidding. But it was very, very challenging. I took a Dave Teckham course, which is like the most amazing. Teckham is the best. But
Teckham's a great guy.
Yeah. But what I found was very difficult for me was, number one, what did I want to get out of the course, right? So I wanted just to do the thing. I didn't really – maybe I was like, oh, I'll judge some competitions or whatever. Turns out for me, judging is very, very hard. I don't do it anymore because it's like I go 12 rounds, right? To judge 12 beers and then take a break and then do another one later in the day. I don't have the mental fortitude to do that. It's very, very hard to do personally for me. Maybe it's easier for you guys. I don't know. But like knowing that, and then you go, okay, now I have to sort of know a good portion about all these beer styles. I definitely could have used sort of a primer. And Jeff, that's what you're offering on your site too. You can, it's a paid thing. I can hire you to help me prep for the courses, you know, give me in-depth question reviews. So I imagine it's something like pretend like it's a flashcard or something like, hey, what's going on? Someone I can talk to. And the BJCP classes are great. People who teach them are great. But there is that added review that you do actually really need.
Well, I think this is something you can take at your own pace too. So that's one of the nice things about it.
Yeah. And I think there is a lot of, you know, a lot of exams that are out there in general, right? There's, you've got to know your stuff.
Yeah.
But then you got to know how to take the exam too. And I think that's kind of what I put forward on this. You've got 90 minutes to really regurgitate a lot of information, and you just can't go in and say, I know beer, I'm going to go in. You know, in order to score very well and get that 90, because I'll say that the 90 is almost the ceiling of what you're going to get on this. You're not going to, it's like a 50 point beer. You're not going to get 100 on this. And so you've got to eke in there, and you got to get every word's got to be crisp, and you have to be fast, and you have to have, you know, I don't know when the last time you wrote by hand for 90 minutes is.
I was doing this, man. I was wiggling my wrist the entire, writing my name, God damn, I don't even know. And then the spelling, don't even get me wrong. Like, you know, you're writing on by hand and you expect to see that red line underneath, like you spelled something wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No. And so, I mean, you've got to know, you know, all these different styles, and you've got to be able to regurgitate a recipe, and how are you going to be able to do that and memorize all that on top of everything else you've got to memorize?
Still remember the recipe I was supposed to get. It was a Doppelbach. And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Because when you're studying for the test, you sort of like, at least what I did is I go, well, fuck it. The recipe, I'm going to get it wrong no matter what, because I don't have a head for that. I don't really get that whole thing. So I sort of avoided it. But I feel like if I had some prompting or some training, I would have got it. And not to make it sound like a giant plug for you, because, you know, I don't really care. But to become the BJCP judge, to do this thing, to sort of support the homebrewing community, there is an aspect of it that is very much like you need to take it very seriously. And like you said, you can't just go in and go, I know beer, so I'm going to be fine. To me, I think that's the Cicerone program. Not that you don't have to know anything. Not that it's just like some shitty whatever, because you do have to know a lot. But that's general beer knowledge, and this is more specific.
Yeah.
It is very difficult.
And there's a lot of memorization. You know, I mean, you need to know certain ranges. You need to know certain styles. You need to be within those things. So there's a ton to cram into those 90 minutes. You know, I did, I think, about 6 months of studying leading up to that exam, you know, I didn't want to waste all the information that I put together. I said, hey, this is probably going to be helpful for some people. You can't go into it without a plan.
Right.
You have to have that. And I've got my project management professional. I'm an engineer. It's the hardest exam I've ever taken. Sheer amount of knowledge you have to retain. Yeah.
Not everybody knows how to really take an exam well and what is going to impress the graders. Like, you need to know your audience. They're national or higher judges, you know, grading your exams. A lot of them are masters these days or grandmasters. And you need to regurgitate the kind of knowledge that's going to make them say, hey, this guy really is, you know, 90 plus.
Yeah.
Jeff, I don't think 90 is the limit either. You can eke out a 93 or a 90, you know, you can get up.
You could, sure. There, you could. I mean, you could also win the lottery too. Jeff, do you think that becoming a beer judge helped you make better homebrew? And that's what we sort of been saying that forever and ever. And it's like, yeah, sometimes sure, but it depends on the kind of brewer you are. Is that something where you recall your training and your knowledge from the BJCP and put it to practical use in entering beers for competition or just brewing beers in general?
I would say both, all of those. Yeah, for sure. I think the number one thing for me was, you know, joining a homebrew club. That when I joined the Mad Zymergists a long time ago, I didn't know what diacetyl was, you know, and I found out that I'm not really sensitive to it.
Yeah.
So I was able to say like, hey, this thing, you know, it's just popcorn. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. They actually can. It's called Coors Banquet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, ain't no diacetyl in that one.
No.
Yeah. So for sure, I think, you, by the nature of going through the study for this, you have to learn all of these off flavors. You have to learn how to write a score sheet such that you can tell somebody, I taste this, this is how you fix this. Mm-hmm. And so by doing all that, I think my homebrew drastically improved, honestly, by joining the club, listening to, you know, the various programs within
Brewing
Network.
There you go.
I did. I listened through all those on the way to work, like living in the Bay Area, you know, you spend a lot of time in your car. So, you know, I learned a ton by going back and forth, listening to that stuff and the study too. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, off of your website, masterthebjcb.com, you can have access to the beers that you have on tap.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You can see it. Yeah. Cool.
So there you go. You have a stout. You got a pineapple cider. You got some homebrews going on, man. And you know, I think that's very funny. I was like, oh look, I found what's on tap. There Absolutely. We go. What this guy's drinking. I think that's cool, man. And I really encourage, especially after taking the exam. I still carry my card around with me wherever I go. I don't know why. It is sort of a badge of honor, even though I've used it twice. One was for the Sam Adams long shot competition where I didn't really understand what was involved in judging a beer competition or being a judge in a beer. I put them together for more beer and like, you know, whatever, but I didn't really get what it means to be a judge. And taking the exam is one thing. Judging beer in an exam is a whole different story, and it sort of really opened my eyes to the chaos, the orderly chaos that is involved in judging beer. I judge like a flight of 10 beers. I'm like, wow, that was, man, that was really, well, I'll see you guys. And they're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, we are taking a break, but then the next flight is going on. I'm like,
I've
been here 4 hours. What do you mean the next? Like, I think the fuck are you talking about?
This is legacy. Things have changed a little bit since then, and most modern competitions, and especially now in this era, you know, they think about their judges differently. And it you know, when we used to, you're probably thinking of like when the Mad Zymergist guys were running NHC, you know, and we had to do that because that's all the judges we had. Now, you know, I mean, yeah, it's still hard to get enough judges for your competition sometimes, but the organizers really try to design what I'm doing comp. We try to design it so you're judging no more than 7 or 8 beers and it's just one flight, you know.
Yeah.
And make it easier. So, but
well, that's good. But and that's also a nice response or reflection maybe of the homebrewing, you know, industry, where more people are becoming judges and it's easier to get people. I do remember putting together the comp for the More Beer Forum competition. It was impossible to find people. That shit was very, very hard.
Take it back. I remember judging the B3 Forum, one of the two of them actually, at the old EJ, at the current EJ Fair, but it was under construction.
Yeah.
And then actually at More Beer and doing like 3 flights at each one.
Yeah.
And finishing best of show at like that 9 was tough. p.m.
Right. And putting that together then, I'm like, you're just taking a sip of beer. It's fine. But it's a lot of the mental fortitude to you tasting the beer. You can't, over time, you can't let the alcohol get to you because you still have to write your shit down. And that's the focus, man. It's like, just like after doing these shows, after doing 2 of these Dr. Homebrews back to back, it's like, I'm tired. Like mentally, I'm just like, fuck, man. It's anyway,
so there are still some poorly run competitions that will push their judges a little too hard. Yeah. And, you know, as you know, it's a lot of times the, you know, just ones that aren't run by beer judges, you know, they're run by a county fair or something. They're like, oh, well, we only got this many judges. We just need to make them do this. But
right.
Anyway.
Right.
We're digressing off topic here, but I probably...
yeah. The main thing is if you want an inside look at the BJCP exam, if you want to take the BJCP exam, check out masterthebjcp.com, and it's very good website. It's a very good place to get information from because you can take a class and that's cool, but it's all the ancillary stuff too. It's the prep for it. It's all that kind of stuff. If you're very, very serious about taking the exam and doing well on the exam, you're going to need a little bit extra help. And Jeff, you know, can definitely help you out with that too. So
plus you get to check that out. Not only look at Jeff's beautifully designed slides, but you get to listen to his voice for a long time.
My bedroom voice,
into the night.
You have
some
dulcet tones going on there, man.
Well, really, the first class is just a slide after slide of what beer he has on tap, just for an hour.
Right, yeah.
Over and over again. Anyway, Jeff, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Hopefully this gives you guys a little bit of, not insight, but a little bit of motivation to take the BJCP exam. We definitely need more beer judges out in the world, and if you want to improve your beer, you don't even have to take beer. You don't even have to judge beer. You don't even have to judge beer competitions. If you just want to improve your beer at home, take the BJCP exam. Prep for it. Maybe don't even fucking take the goddamn thing, but prep for it. You're going to learn a ton about it.
Learning is helpful to, you know.
Exactly.
From what Jeff was talking about earlier, I learned to, like, oh, I have this certain house character in my beers. What is that? I don't know. You know, and as you learn and study and taste more beers with people and with people that know their ass from a hole in the ground and beer judges, they're like, oh, that's acetaldehyde. Well, to me, it tastes like pumpkin skins. To you, it tastes like green apple or whatever, you know. And there's different ways people perceive things. Not everybody tastes things or sees things the same.
That's right.
You know, you have to learn where your weaknesses are. Jeff can't taste diacetyl as well as others. You know, that's a blind spot. Some people just can't taste it at all.
Take the class and laugh at him because of that. That's fine. You own his time at that point. So you can just take the however long it takes and just make fun of him for not tasting diacetyl. And he'll have to take it.
Make fun of Jeff and his beautiful house in Santa Barbara and his good life and everything else and his job. And I'm just going to be like, yeah, I'm a master and you're not, because you've got a house and your life is great.
But I think we can probably blame, like, you know,
I think Char's drunk.
We probably kept him up too late the night before the exam, and when you should have been studying, and we gave you, you know, triples and really strong beers the night before your exam, probably in Providence, and it's all our fault. I consider it.
There you go. Sure.
It's always been your guys' fault. Between 22s on my beers and.
But you put all this information together.
Providence was so much fun. But I think back to Providence, though. Providence was like, that was a time when we could go places and do things and have fun. Like, yeah, I had a blast with you guys in Providence. Right.
You can drink other people's beers and be around 1,000 of your closest friends and get all sweaty with them. Yeah, that was good times.
Why not? Yeah.
Are we going to be comfortable doing that again?
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah,
no.
A couple of years.
Already, like, even like,
I'll be fine.
The email we got because we submitted a thing to do a talk at HomebrewCon, Dr. Homebrew Live. That'd be kind of fun. But even the email we got the other day from John, it was like, oh, Dr. we might Homebrew be open. I don't know. We'll know more mid March. I was like, I don't think we should do it. I think it's a bad idea. I don't know. Let's just skip it. Let's just skip it. We'll do it virtual. It's fine.
So, Jeff, how much are you charging people to sponsor your back bar there and the fancy screen? Is it it's $200, $300 for the course, right?
No. So, $49. $49. You know, just try to keep the lights on. To keep the taps flowing.
There you go.
But I saw that, and it's approachable. And like you said, you've got a limited audience. This is
is, you know, and I'm going to start, working on the tasting exam next. I'm sort of working my way down, to bigger fish, I guess. But,
well, it's been years since you took that exam. You probably don't even remember what that was.
It has. It has. So I was supposed to take it again. I guess when the hell was it? I don't know. March last year or something up in Portland. It is rescheduled for May, so I don't know. Maybe I'll make it up to Portland again and see if that flies, and I'll take it again. So, but I need one more push to get up to the rarefied air of the Bryans.
need something like a half a point to get there, right? Like
it's close. We'll put it that way.
You know, all right. Well, that's it.
The tasting exam was always my bugaboo,
Brian Schaar.
And it was always
such an asshole.
I'll just say that it's the toughest thing for me to get was just to trust my own palate. And I would keep screwing up the tasting exam time after time after time. I had the actual facts because I'm, you know, half on the spectrum and whatever. I could vomit out whatever facts you want for the written exam. Tasting exam was the tough part. And it was because I wouldn't trust myself about what I was really tasting.
Yeah.
And when I finally got to the point of this is what I taste. I'm writing it down. I don't give a shit if anybody else tastes it or not. This is what I taste. That's when I got that score I needed to be a master.
Nice.
Use the force.
Well, and that's that's really like a good life lesson too, honestly.
It really is. Yeah. It really is.
Trust yourself, man.
Trust yourself.
Yeah. Jeff, thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And good luck with the site, masterthebjcp.com. Again, we need more beer judges out in the universe. So become one. If you're a home brewer, and obviously if you're a home brewer, because you're fucking listening to this stupid show. But if you're a home brewer who's serious about winning awards and who wants to give back to the community, there's no way to do it like being a judge, becoming a beer judge, supporting your own home brewing community. And if you need help on the test, Jeff can definitely help you out. So
it's fun, and you have time to do it now still. Now, later this year, your schedule, remember your weekends prior to...
Oh, yeah, they're gone, dude. They're gone. You know what else is
study right now?
Yeah, you know what else is cool is being on this show. If you want to send us beer, which I understand we basically doo-dooed in a bottle and sent it back to Jeff, you know, metaphorically for his beers. But don't be like that. If you want to be on this show, and I don't know what I'm saying anymore, guys. I'm sorry. Email
what are you saying?
Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. We're taking wine. We're taking mead. We're taking cachaça. We're taking cider.
Keep saying that. We don't take any of that shit.
We are. We're taking cachaça. All of it. We're taking all of it right now. Brian, shut up. We're taking all of that right now. Whatever we want. We need people on the show. And whatever you're fermenting at home, we will take right now. Look, I'll tell you what. If you're fucking fermenting sauerkraut, send it over. I don't care. I don't give a shit. Send it us. We'll take it. Okay?
I want some cachaça. I don't know what cachaça is. I want to fucking drink some cachaça. Send that shit in, man.
It's a rum. It's like a South American rum.
All right. Then bring it. Let's cachaça right now.
If you distill at home, let's do that too. I don't even care. Anyway, Jeff, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you to Five Star, of course, for supporting the show. Thank you to More Beard. Thank you to Sully at 21A. Thank you to all our sponsors. Send them all emails. All these commercials that you hear, send everybody emails. Let them know that you appreciate them supporting the show because we appreciate that too. So thank you very much.
Here's Sully, we thank you. Will you come in and have coffee with me, please?
There you go. I'm going to just mute everybody. So because if I try to get out of here one more time and Brian Schaar has some autistic thing to say, I'm going to fucking vomit. All right. Thanks, everybody, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you maybe tomorrow later. Bye.